News Insider from ParanewsInsider.com. Produced by WCJV Digital Broadcasting, Youngstown, New York.
And welcome to the Paranormal News Insider for the week of February 16th, 2016, and episode 253. And this is your host, Dr. Brian D. Parsons. I know, today is the 17th if you're listening in live. We're a day behind, and there's a little reason for that. We had a little hiccup last night. I want to apologize to anybody who was tuning in last night to hear me live. Well, I did come back about an hour and a half later to sit and talk with Frank Lee for a couple of hours, which is a great time with Paranormalities and Ponderings with Frank Lee, and talking about science. It felt like, to me, I was sitting on the front porch with a fellow investigator. It was a lot of fun, and you can find the archive all over Facebook. It was a lot of fun, and he actually invited me back, so I must have done something right. And I'll be back in a couple of weeks, maybe a couple of months, who knows. But it was a good time, and I look forward to being on that show again. But what about tonight's show? What's going on tonight? Tonight is a very interesting show. This week's news includes a Yeti at a Spanish ski resort is captured. And you're going to see some live video of this. It's going to be exciting. A Utah UFO picture solved. Fast times in southwest China. New hilarious ghost show coming soon. NASA chimes in on a Indian meteorite death, and India subsequently fires back. Alien egg in Utah solved, and our volcanoes out of control. We'll also have the book of the week, some conferences, conventions, and maybe talk about gravitational waves if I've got the time. Now, all kinds of stuff happening. This is so weird. I'm so out of sorts. It's Wednesday night, not Tuesday night, but I'll be back on my regularly scheduled night, Tuesday night next week. And we'll bring you the show live. And if I got to bring some chickens into the studio for the sacrifice for the Skype gods, that's what I'm going to do. So again, apologize for the issues for last night. It's radio. That's what happens. And that's what makes it fun. Keep you on your toes. And I also mentioned, last week I talked about the all the events that's coming up for me. It's time is just moving so fast. April 16th. Is the Butler Paranormal Convention in Butler, Pennsylvania. It's going to be a great time. I'll be talking about the basics of cryptozoology research and the field itself. A nice little PowerPoint thing and discussion with that. And then on May 6th to the 8th, I'll be speaking at the Pennsylvania Bigfoot Camping Adventure with host Eric Altman in Farmington, Pennsylvania. Also speaking that weekend is Stan Gordon, Squatch Detective Radio host Steve Coles, and there'll be workshops, day and night hikes, a lot of food, and even more fun. And that presentation will be a little different because I won't have PowerPoint. I'll be just kind of talking. I'll just be going over a lot of things. I'll have a lot of visual aids and things, tracks and different things that I've acquired over the years through different forms of research and investigation, and just kind of putting together a presentation to teach and train through the basics of my book, Handbook for the Amateur Cryptozoologist. And then to follow that up on May 12th, just a couple of days later, I'll be in Columbus, Ohio at the Westerville Public Library and talking again about cryptozoology. It'll be similar to the Butler Paranormal Convention presentation I'm doing, but hopefully we'll include some new findings and new evidence, as well as some pictures and things that occurred over the weekend in Pennsylvania. So looking forward to that. It's going to be a trifecta of fun. Those couple of events, those two of them are pretty much right back to back. It's going to be interesting and a lot of fun to get the presentation turned around in just a couple of days. But that's what I do. And looking forward to that and getting back to Westerville Public Library. I've been there for this will be my ninth consecutive year going down there, and I'll also be going down in the fall for a ghost presentation. So if you're anywhere in the area, come on down. It's a standing room only last year. It was a lot of fun. Now, the big news of the week, the Yeti. And we talked about this story last week. A mysterious video, and it was only like, 5 seconds long? And two pictures showed up in the media and went viral. Now, it's kind of faded away for some strange reason. I don't know why no one's talking about this. But the reports of this thing were everywhere. And officials were laughing off the story, yet they still searched the ski resort looking for tracks, looking for signs of this creature, and basically said, this isn't happening, this isn't real. And they kind of just laughed it off, really. And they said that we'd keep an eye out for whatever's going on. But then, all of a sudden, about a week ago, there was some strange stories coming out that the Yeti in question had been captured. Video footage showed up on YouTube a few hours later. And I'm going to throw that. If you haven't seen it, I posted it this afternoon on my Facebook page for Paranews Insider, which also went to the Twitter feed as well. And it's now in the live chat room. So if you're in the live chat room, you can see this video for yourself. It's pretty neat. A bunch of officers are taking this body and putting it into the back of a truck, and they're driving it away. What's going on? Well, we'll find out, because there's a live press conference that's going to be taking place in about 30 seconds here. So it's actually it's not live. It's already recorded, and it was held Wednesday to announce the news, and it began with a video. So I'm going to put this in the chat room, and what you're about to see is actual footage from this press conference announcing that a Yeti has been captured. So I'm going to put this in here now. Now, a word of caution. There's a little bit of language in the video. There's a couple of words that might not be safe for children or for the work situation. And there it is. If you're in the chat room, you're watching along and you see this thrilling, exciting video of proof of the Yeti. And in case you're listening in on the archive of the show, I'll let you know that the video of the Yeti being transported, like I just mentioned, is already on the Paranormal News Facebook page and the Twitter feed. But this press conference will be up pretty much by the time you hear this archive. And not to ruin the excitement, but I'm going to go ahead and explain what you're going to see, because it's not really that exciting. The video opens with news clippings of the sighting, followed by a song being played. And the song, probably pretty familiar if you've been around for a while and you've seen some crazy videos online. The song is Dr. Dre's The Next Episode, featuring Snoop Dogg. And as that song starts to play, you see the silhouette sit up, and the Yeti pops up wearing sunglasses. Yeah, well, what's up with that? Well, the whole thing turns out to be nothing more than a viral marketing campaign between the Aramon Ski Resort and Hawker's sunglasses. Thanks a lot for ruining 2 weeks of my life, guys. All right, that story's done. All right, thanks, guys. Now to UFO news. A mystery surrounding UFO pictures may now have been solved. And I mentioned it last night, if you listened in, when I was on Frank Lee's show, that he asked me what was going on, without spilling the beans about any particular story, what was new and exciting. Well, I mentioned that this week there's an unprecedented amount of stories that are kind of unveiled, that the mysteries behind them are being unwound this week. There's actually a good amount of follow-up stories to these stories. And a lot of times people just post things on social media and they're all excited about it, and it goes away. And then the next cool story pops up and everyone's all excited about it, and they could care less about the solution of the other story. I can't sleep at night. I need to know the answers to these stories. I need to know the truth behind any of these stories that come out. And some of them are driving me nuts, like the merman story. Whatever happened to the merman? Was it really fake? I mean, sure it was. But some of these stories that come out, you never hear about the solutions unless you really do the digging and find the answer. And this is another one that I pretty much knew already was kind of fake, but I didn't really know the true answer. Now it's been resolved. And back on episode number 247, which would be January 5th, the Paranormal News Insider, there was a story about Dr. Richard O'Connor out of Clancy, Utah, who found UFOs within the near 280,000 pictures he took in almost 2 years of searching for UFOs. That is dedication. And like I mentioned during that story, I love research, but that's a little crazy. O'Connor had two cameras set up on his back deck in the hopes of capturing UFOs. And on November 4th of 2015, around noon, it finally happened. O'Connor shared his UFO pictures, but was surprised to hear that many people felt that a logical explanation was more likely than the photograph showing genuine UFOs. Now, he enlisted the help of Peter Davenport, who is the director of the National UFO Reporting Center. While one person who studied the photograph stated it was genuine, but could not explain the objects in the image, another one stated that the photograph was a fake. Well, he never did really explain what he meant by that. To me, it didn't look photoshopped. It didn't really have that much detail in it. But now the truth might have come out, and O'Connor has finally raised the white flag after being attacked by many who have offered a variety of explanations. The article on the Great Falls Tribune website for the story reads, UFO now believed to be H2O. It turns out that he has admitted that the UFO pictures were more than likely water droplets captured by his camera. Going on the popular suggestion that the objects were merely water droplets, O'Connor used a turkey baster to simulate raindrops and took photographs with the cameras to see if there was a correlation. That's science, folks. That's good job on his part. Though, through these experiments, though, he did realize that he was more than likely wrong and finally admitted this last Wednesday to friends. So it's going to be pretty tough to make this big announcement on your web page and go public with the fact that you think you found UFO pictures and then have to backtrack. But kudos to him for doing the actual work and admitting that he was wrong, because it's hard to do when you're that dedicated to something and spend that much time searching for things like that. So, kudos. Now a kind of a creepy story. I'm not sure how I feel about this. I heard about this a while ago when they were building this, and I didn't really know this other factoid that we're going to talk about here. But it is cool. It's neat. But at the same time, I'm a little taken aback by some of the details in here. A giant radio telescope, which is 22 years in the making, is nearing completion. The construct 500-meter aperture spherical telescope in China, known as FAST. I don't know why it's known as FAST. It doesn't make any sense. But anyway, okay, I guess it's 5 aperture spherical telescope. I guess 100 doesn't mean anything in the definition. But back in 2001, it was constructed, even though 1994 it was given birth with the idea. It's slated to finally be completed in September of this year. Now, one major hurdle is left with the 0.3-mile wide radio telescope, which is 5.5 football fields wide. It's pretty big. And that is to create a sound electromagnetic wave environment. Well, the reason for this is so there will be no local interference with the radio telescope as it attempts to gather waves from distant places. You don't want to hear somebody's radio going off, I guess. Now, how will this be accomplished? Well, it's pretty simple. All you got to do is remove the 9,110 residents from a 3-mile radius of the telescope. Wow, that's it? Okay, cool. Hope they didn't pay taxes for that. Those evacuated from the area, their words, not mine, evacuated is actually in the story, it's kind of weird, will receive compensation in the form of 12,000 Chinese yuan, or 1,275 British pounds. Well, that sounds like a lot of money. It's a good chunk of change, right? But it's really just $1,822.16, give or take a penny or two. Yikes. That's not quite a whole lot of money, but I'm not sure what kind of environment these people live in the mountains in China. But still, that doesn't seem like a whole lot of compensation for uprooting your entire life and having to move away. Now, this highly sensitive radio telescope is much like the one in Puerto Rico, which is called Arecibo, except it's almost twice as big, 3 times more sensitive, and will be the biggest one in the world. And what is it going to be used for? Well, Wu Zhangping, the director general of the Chinese Astronomical Society, said that FAST's high level of sensitivity would help scientists to, quote, search for intelligent life outside of the galaxy and explore the origins of the universe, unquote. Pretty cool. China is flexing its muscle here and is showing off its technological prowess to the world. Way to go, guys. Moving all those people out. Pretty cool. Takes a lot to do that, I guess. But hopefully they will use this radio telescope for a little bit more than searching for alien messages. But the good news is, this is the best place in the world for that to happen, if it does happen. Just a shame that they have to move all those people out. I don't know how much I agree with it, but that's your communist state of China there. Now, first little break here. I want to remind you that if you are listening in live, you can also listen in on an archive. And if you're listening in an archive, you can also listen in live. Does that make sense? Hope so. And there are many, many ways to listen to the archives of the show. The first and quickest way is through Mixcloud. Now, you can download the Mixcloud app or you can listen to it through your computer. It's pretty much available right after the show's done. Get it up there and you can listen to that, or you can subscribe to it and listen right when it's done. You know, the show is on a little early for some people, especially you guys out there in on the West Coast, if you're listening in. And this podcast can be found, you know, the recorded version of this radio cast can be heard on Podbean, which also has its own little app there. You can get that from Google Play or the App Store, and also gets fed into iTunes for all you Apple folks out there. Now, we were just talking about the X-Files in the chat room. This is a controversial story, so I'm going to warn you in advance. Anybody who is lightly, easily offended, you might want to cover your ears, turn down the volume, get up and walk away here. This is going to be a little controversial. Let's stir the pot here. Ghost News. Now, Monday night, we enjoyed the fifth of the six episodes for season 10 of The X-Files. And we're just talking about it in the chat room. Spoiler alert, if you haven't seen this, show. I'm going to spoil the last 5 seconds of it. It doesn't really have any pivotal meaning in the entire show. It stirred up a lot of controversy because of some of the racial things that were involved in this. And a lot of people are really upset, really all over the internet, angry. Now, I liked it. I thought it was a great episode. And I understand how people would be sensitive to the content in the show. But I think it was done the best you can. I mean, it's obvious it's part of the conspiracy, and it's the conspiracy folks that have generated some of this stuff. But really and truly, the shining moment of that episode for me was at the end, the last 5 seconds. Mulder and Scully are standing there in Mulder's remote property, and he hears sky noise, and he looks up in the sky. I thought that was really cool. I got all excited. Wow, sky noise is on the X-Files. But anyway, coming this spring, there's going to be another six-episode television show. No, it's not The X-Files coming back. Not yet. But Destination America, all right, the flagship for great ghost shows, will present Ghost Brothers. Ghost Brothers. Destination America states, quote, the series follows best friends Dalen Spratt, Juan Mass, and Marcus Harvey on a mission to uncover whether some legendary haunted houses are the real deal. All raised in a religious household, Spratt, Mass, and Harvey were taught that messing with the dead is dangerous business. But their own unexplained experiences piqued their fascination, driving them to find out how spooky the supernatural can be. Ghost Brothers is described as blending the group's natural curiosity with comedic flair, offering a fresh and funny and unique take on the spirit world, unquote. And my words are emphasized to cover up the stink of manure. The series will present a comedic take on ghost hunting, and it showcases the first African-American paranormal investigation team on television. Wow, just what we need. Because nothing is more hilarious than ghosts and trying to find evidence of the most elusive aspect of the human mind using science. racial prejudice and a little comedy sprinkled in for fun to make it a little less controversial, I guess. Just what we need, some more quality television entertainment to continue to teach new people and grow the culture of ghost investigation strong. Congratulations, Destination America. I mean, while we're at it, let's just throw some racial stuff in there as well, right, guys? Great job. I wish I was a producer in this show and sitting around and go, hey, how can we poke the bear? What can we do to make things a little bit more worse in the ghost field? I mean, seriously, what's next? What are we going to have? Los Malditos Fantasmas? La Búsqueda de Fantasmas Humildes? I mean, see? No? I don't know. Nothing surprises me anymore with ghost investigation television. It's all about entertainment. Always has, always will. And I just hope people will stop using these shows for their education in the paranormal field. It's all entertainment. Most of what you're learning is regurgitated opinions. It's not fact. Really, there is no facts. There are no facts in the paranormal. Even books. But these TV shows, far, far worse. And this particular show is being produced by Pilgrim Media Group, the same company that produces the quality entertainment known as Ghost Hunters. And this new purportedly unscripted comedic take on ghosts, yeah, we'll find out how unscripted it really is, starts on April 15th at 10 p.m. But be sure to check your local listings. I mean, you wouldn't want to miss out on this groundbreaking event. Me, I'd probably be doing my taxes. I don't know. I won't be watching that for sure. Anyway, I just think it's a little crazy that we have to throw racial things in here to try to sell television shows. All right. Well, what other controversy do we have? Well, we have some controversy in India as well. It's, if you've been paying attention, there's some angry words going back and forth through the internet here. Another update here on a story I covered last week about a strange incident that took place on Saturday, February 6th in the state of Tamil Nadu in India. An object purportedly fell from the sky over an engineering school, landed on the ground, and exploded. The explosion blew out windows on buses, injured two gardeners, a student, and sadly killed a 40-year-old bus driver. Now, initial reports of the incident pointed towards a meteorite as a potential cause. A 2-foot crater was found at the center of the blast site, and fragments of debris were collected and thought to be either from a meteorite or a piece of space junk. The debris was sent out to be analyzed by a scientist from the Indian Institute of Astrophysics. However, just a couple of days later, NASA came out to say that it is more than likely not a meteorite that was responsible for the blast. Their logic is, first, meteorites of such a small size would not have exploded at ground level, nor would it have left such a large and deep crater. Well, the first point I agree with you on. The second part, it's a little shaky there, because it's really not true. NASA states the crater is more than likely caused by a ground-based explosion and not a meteorite. While the small rock discovered at the scene supposedly is not large enough to do the damage that was described. However, a couple of days after the NASA announcement, a team from the Trichy National College stated that the fragments were in fact pieces of the meteorite. Have that, NASA. What do you got to say now? The team of geologists, chemists, and biotechnology areas identified multiple objects as having the correct characteristics of meteorites after being scanned with a scanning electron microscope as well as under Fourier transform infrared spectrometry. Now, they searched everywhere. They were up on the top of the buildings. They collected rocks from all over the place. It wasn't a small localized blast. This was, they gathered things. I forget the actual distance, but it was quite far, 60, 70 feet, including vertical and horizontal. So there was a pretty decent sized explosion here. And these meteorite fragments were found that far away. So something big happened. The initial object thus far that has created all this conflict has been named BEC-1, referring to the sample number and the site where it was recovered. The team will now submit their findings to various journals for others to confirm or deny. It's this little thing called the scientific process. If this is in fact a piece of meteorite, which, these guys have said it is, but we'll see. I still don't know yet. I'm still on the fence myself, personally. And if it is truly a piece of meteorite, it will be the first known fatality caused by one, which is pretty scary, considering how many recent sightings of flashes in the sky and noise caused by decent-sized meteorites and all the tracking that's going on with these things. It's a little spooky of what's going on. And also in this section, I've got another cool story, other news here, another awesome story that was perplexing. It was really scratching my head about it. I had no idea what was going on here. And I knew there had to be a logical solution, but none presented itself. And I thought this was going to be another story that's just going to fade away into the sunset because it actually, when it came out, it was already over 2 years old. So I questioned whether or not we'd actually ever get to the bottom of this story. But now, thanks to a family member of somebody related to this incident, I can now rest easy. It's they've finally come clean with this, and it's a pretty cool story here. It's about these alien eggs. If you remember, episode number 245, which was back on December 22nd of last year, this story was on the purported alien eggs found in Utah Lake. That's the name of the lake in Utah, Utah Lake, that went viral. It was all over YouTube, and it spread across the internet. But it was uploaded on September 18th, 2013, which is weird. It mysteriously just all of a sudden gained a lot of momentum in December. But that was a good thing. Not just for me and not just for you, for me to analyze it and talk about it here on the Paranormal News Insider, but it got the attention of the person responsible for it. On January 16th of this year, Ann Lewis wrote a blog and shared her daughter's class assignment project that ended up going viral in a different way. Claire Lewis was taking a new genre class at Brigham Young University back in 2013, where the assignment for an art project was to use body residue and repetition. Claire used a combination of flour, salt, and water dough and baked shapes using the inside of her fist as a mold. With the help of her friend Lara Varela, she spread the baked pieces on the then-frozen Utah lake in a geometric pattern. Then she did something weird. I don't know why she did this. I think it was to inspire a little bit of viralness. She then erased the prints leading to the large shape using a shovel. When they came back the next day, they noted that the dough had sunk into the ice, and this was due to the salt in the mixture. Yeah, the salt. That's why they sank into the ice. Everyone was wondering how that happened. Probably the simplest and easiest solution to this, and most of us overlooked it. I know I overlooked it. And the girls also noted that there were dozens of prints surrounding the object in the ice, in the snow. And that's where we got our cool little video from, where these guys filmed it. They talked about how scary and mysterious it was. And then they just walked away and left it there. Didn't pick up a piece of it. Didn't try, you know, to, you know, flick it at each other or poke it with a stick or do anything with it. Get it analyzed. Lick it. Anything. Because if they licked it, they probably would have realized what it was. I'm sure that's kind of gross. But, you know, a little just anybody really looking at it, taking it out of that environment, washing it off, letting it get to room temperature, you probably would have figured out what it was. But photographs of her work, including the process of making the dough pieces, hung in the Franklin S. Harris Fine Arts Center in the home of the BYU College of Fine Arts and Communications in Provo, Utah. After a while, her artwork was rotated out, and she thought that was the end of this project. Well, that is until she uncovered 50 websites, at least 50 websites, talking about her art project and speculating on what the objects were. You know, I wasn't really speculating, but I was wondering. I was confused. I couldn't figure out what they were. Pieces of dough? I'm sure it was in there somewhere, but it really wasn't on the tip of my mind. And to all of us that guessed and all of us that got it wrong, or all of us that couldn't figure out, here's a little salt in your eye. That's a pun. It was supposed to be funny. But anyway, now, kind of a this is a weird story here. A little tipping of the tables here on a story that I covered a couple of weeks ago, January 26th, Paranormal News Insider, episode number 250. I talked about a story where it is based on the thought that many hospitable planets may not have continued to be hospitable due to a lack of supporting life on the planet to affect the climate. The headlines were stating that the reason we have not found intelligent life out there is because it may already be extinct. That was the story then. Astronomer Rory Barnes has created a habitability index for analyzing the possibility of life on other planets. Barnes took the traditional thinking, which is that planets may support life that are in what is called the circumstellar habitable zone, which is essentially a ring area around a star where a planet can evolve around it and still have liquid water on the surface. This distance means we're neither too warm nor too cold for the liquid water to form on the surface. And it also goes by the appropriate name, the Goldilocks zone. You might have heard of that before. Barnes takes this information and adds an area around stars where planets would need to receive particular amount of light and energy consistently, which would depend on how circular the orbit would be around a star. Using this and other information, Barnes comes to the conclusion his new habitability index, the Earth would only score 82%. Earth needs to study for these exams. On this finding, Barnes says, quote, basically, where we lose some of the probability or chance for life is that we would be too close to the sun. We are actually kind of close to the inner edge of the habitability zone. If we spotted Earth with our current techniques, we would reasonably conclude that it would be too hot for life, unquote. Kind of disturbing when you think about it. We've spent so much time thinking we were the center of the galaxy and estimating other planets that we've now realized that ours may not look hospitable to other planets that may be looking toward the Milky Way and our solar system. Barnes' research is titled Comparative Habitability of Transiting Exoplanets and was submitted last September and was published in the Astrophysical Journal. Science. It's all about science. It's scary when you think about it. And I would remind you now that you're listening to WCJV Digital Broadcasting out of Youngstown, New York, and you're listening to the Paranormal News Insider with your host, Dr. Brian D. Parsons, on a Wednesday. Crazy. But again, like I mentioned, next week we're going to return to our normally scheduled day and time on Tuesday night at 7 p.m. Eastern. And another weird change here is that I got a different show following me tonight. And be sure to tune in tonight following the Paranormal News Insider, as at 8 p.m. Eastern, we're going to have Paranormal Experienced as Kat Hobson talks with longtime director of the South Jersey Ghost Research, owner of the Ghost Hunter store, and part of the cast of Ghost Detectives, Dave Giuliano. The guy, he's been around forever, it seems like. I know when I first started out, he was a guy that I networked with. Probably won't remember me, but I was just some Joe Schmo. Not that I'm anybody important now, but he's been around a long time, and he's got a lot of great information to talk about. So I highly recommend tuning into this show. If you can hear it live or listen in on an archive, it's going to be a great show. And next week, I'll be before Frank Lee again, which would be great. He's going to have Scotty Roberts next week. That's also going to be a really good show. A lot of great stuff here on WCJV. If you're not listening, when we have shows on, you're missing out on some great information, especially last night. My goodness, where were you guys at? Were you not here? You missed out if you weren't here. Let's see, what else is going on here? Volcanoes. Well, yeah, I guess I'll talk about volcanoes. Crazy stuff. If you've been looking at the news lately, and especially the paranormal stuff, I know strangesounds.org has really been pushing the volcano stuff lately. It's a little disturbing. I know I've been a little, you know, I talked about the all these meteorite flashes that have been seen and how the reports of them are going through the roof. Much, much higher than what they've been in years past, months past. It's getting a little disturbing, getting a little concerning. Now, volcanoes seemingly are the same way. Volcanoes, earthquakes, what's going on with planet Earth right now? Is she getting mad? Is is she getting ready to kick us off? Is this global warming? I mean, what's going on here? And I mentioned the website strangesounds.org. They've been reporting that there's been a recent dramatic increase in volcanic eruptions around the world, which is what got my attention to start digging into some research and looking at this claim. Is this really happening? Japan, Guatemala, Costa Rica, Indonesia, Peru, Antarctica, India, Mexico, and Russia have all experienced one or more volcanic events in just the first 2 weeks of February alone. Japan, Mexico, and Guatemala are dealing with two events each, while the other countries I mentioned have only one area of concern. But I think one volcano is concerning enough, right? So should we be concerned with so many geological events happening at the same time? I mean, is this normal? Is it increasing? Should we pack our bags and head for the moon? I mean, what's going on here? Well, looking back, January was also a busy month. So is there even more cause for concern? Is this really escalating? Is 2016 going to be the year that we get buried in lava? Is it going to be bad? Well, while it does seem concerning, Lee Siebert, former director of the Smithsonian Global Volcanism Program, or conveniently enough, GVP, states, quote, if you plot data from the last 200 years, there's a clear increase in the number of eruptions over time. But that's not a function of the actual number of eruptions, but rather due to the reporting effects, unquote. Okay, I feel a little bit more comfortable now. The folks at Volcano Discovery, a website that tracks earthquakes and volcanic activity, fielded the question, has worldwide volcanic activity been increasing recently? Well, their answer on their website is as follows. We sometimes are being asked if the number of current active volcanoes and ongoing eruptions or global volcanic activity has been increasing recently. Should we be worried globally? Well, the current level of volcanic activity is completely normal. On the contrary, if not on the low end of averages over decades. The main difference is that there is faster and more information available, as well as increased media coverage and public interest on the subject of global volcanic activity. This might give the impression that volcanic activity is on the increase, which again, you can rest easy, it's not. So we should not be worried by global volcanic activity. Unless you live under a volcano, then that's a completely different story. But again, now if I could just find some data that would calm me down about all these meteorites that are falling all over the place, I'd feel a little bit more relaxed here. So volcanoes, you might hear a lot about them in the media. You might hear a lot of different things going on with those things. But fear not, unless you live in the Ring of Fire, or unless Yellowstone National Park all of a sudden blows up, then I'm going to be in a little trouble here in Ohio. Got to shovel out some ash, I think. Now, got a little time here. We're going to talk about the gravitational wave story. I mean, wow. The greatest news in physics in the last 40 years, right? I mean, this is something we should have a parade. I mean, this is big news. Einstein's the man, right? Well, scientists overseeing LIGO, the Laser Interferometer Gravitational Wave Observatory, all these cool names and acronyms. It's awesome. Makes me want to change the show to something that's an acronym. I'm not going to make it. Anyway, these guys announced that they have detected gravitational waves, which is essentially ripples in space-time. These waves were predicted by Einstein's theory of general relativity a century ago. That's 100 years to you and I. Now, Scientific American published a follow-up article on their article of Einstein would be beaming. Scientists react to gravitational waves with an article titled, Is Gravitational Wave Claim True? And Was It Worth the Cost? And asked the question, was the gravitational wave experiment worth the $1.1 billion cost if merely confirms that Einstein was right? Yes, billions. $1.1 billion. That's what was spent over the last 40 years on this experiment. Now, not to be a Debbie Downer, and not to be negative about this. I mean, this is science. This should be exciting, right? This is the greatest moment in physics history in the last 40 years. But I'm not sure if anybody remembers the same announcement that happened nearly 2 years ago. Well, probably not. In March 2014, a team overseeing the background imaging of Cosmic Extragalactic Polarization Observatory, or BICEP-2, how cool is that, claimed to have detected gravitational waves produced by inflation, an extremely rapid and hypothetical cosmic growth spurt. Well, the lead BICEP-2 researcher, John Kovac, assured the New York Times that, quote, the chance that the results were a fluke was only 1 in 10 million, unquote. However, in early 2015, they withdrew their claim, stating that dust in the Milky Way clouded their findings. You get it? Dust in the Milky Way clouded their... Anyway. Granted, the methods of this time, with this latest discovery, using two observatories at a distance, both here in the United States, lowers that margin of error dramatically. So these... You're not really going to question it as much. Obviously, 1 in 10 million would be much more increased. Those odds obviously didn't make it. But the real big issue with all of this is, despite the excitement and promises of time travel and all these other things that people are throwing around, and this being the greatest announcement in physics in years, is that it came at a cost, again, of $1.1 billion for a chirp that lasted less than a fifth of a second, and 40 years of research at a cost of $1.1 billion. That's just crazy when you put it in perspective. You know, we complain about sports people. We complain about baseball players and football players that only play a certain amount of games, or only on the field for a certain amount of time, and may only hit a ball so many times, and all these other things, and how much money they make. It's just kind of disgusting, but this is government money. This is grant money. Other projects were not funded or were impacted due to this search for something that was already part of an existing theory. It wasn't a hypothesis. This was already a theory and was just lacking the recorded documentation to actually make it factual. I mean, did anybody really doubt that Einstein was right? Was his theory ever in doubt? A 100-year-old theory that was barely questioned, being confirmed experimentally, really should not be the pinnacle of physics. But it's all about the funding. And I guess when you break it down, physics really isn't sexy. And Frankly and I were talking last night about if Paranormal Television did a reality show on the reality of ghost investigation, the 4.5 or 5 hours of sitting around doing nothing, or standing around in a cold, dark, wet place doing nothing, just kind of waiting and waiting and waiting, or looking at data or staring at a screen, all these things that we do, it's really not all that exciting for that 10 seconds of excitement. But being a physicist, that's a pretty boring job. I mean, look at those guys walking around in their lab coats all night long. It's not really that exciting of a job. A lot less sexy than being a ghost investigator running around with our black t-shirts on and everything else. But still, I can't take it away from them. And it's still a great discovery. It's it does kind of finalize the theory of relativity here. So now we can turn the page on that. But it doesn't really change anything. It doesn't change the facts. It's not going to lead to any discoveries of traveling through time and living our lives as like comic book characters, going from Earth 1 to Earth 2 and all these other things. We already kind of figured this stuff out. We already knew that this was going to happen. And for anything, for this to be used as any kind of practicality, is still going to take decades and decades of research, more theories, more hypotheses, and more experimentation, building bigger and more powerful things that could blow the Earth up at any second or anything else that people are worried about. But it's science. And I'm just kind of, you think about all the medical research or things that could have been used for, this money. It's a lot of money. Not that I want to, I'm not a pro overpopulationist. I don't think that everybody should live immortally. I mean, we're all going to die, and we should die, because there's only so much space here on the planet. We can't overrun it until we learn how to build something out in space to take us out of here. Now, speaking of science, the book of the week this week, I kind of went back and forth on a number of books. I'm still reading two that were submitted to me by a couple of folks. That hopefully I'll have one done next week. And the other is a pretty long book, and it's pretty good. And I kind of have to go back and reread a little bit because I kind of forget about stuff because I do so much reading all the time. But the book of the week this week is another book. The first book of the week I had, I believe it was the first book, was Benjamin Radford's Scientific Paranormal Investigation. Well, he's back this week with another book of the week. And this one is Mysterious New Mexico, a great book. It's subtitled Miracles, Magic, and Monsters in the Land of Enchantment. So it's a book, I think it came out 2014, I believe. And I was one of the few who got a special limited first 50 edition. I've got number 6 of 50. I'm really proud of that. I'm excited. Of Benjamin Radford's Mysterious New Mexico. Now, if you've ever seen the cover of the book, it's pretty spooky. It's pretty scary. It's actually based on a photographer took this picture for it's a piece of art that was incorporated into this. I'm trying to remember the name of the guy here. The book, it's a photograph of a weeping woman in Hispanic folklore, and it punctuates what this book is about. It's about mysteries. It's about solving mysteries. It sounds a lot like Scooby-Doo, but this book is fantastic. If you're like me and you like to know the beginning and end of a story, this book is fantastic because it talks about a lot of different things that happened in New Mexico. And that was one reservation I had about this. I mean, I've read Benjamin Radford's books. I've talked to him before, and I truly, honestly respect his work, even though he is a skeptic. But he wants ghost investigators and other people to be successful, but he wants to use science, and he's willing to kind of help us out in that arena. That's where he shows up on paranormal shows and talks and does interviews and things. And he writes books geared towards paranormal investigators. He wants us to read. He wants us to become better at what we do. And this book is no exception. Now, again, it's Mysterious New Mexico, and I'm like, I've never been there. I don't know anything about Mexico. I don't live there. I was a little hesitant on getting this book because of that. I didn't think I could relate to these stories. But Ben does a fantastic job of explaining the folklore behind these particular stories, or some of the firsthand accounts behind a lot of these stories. And some of these actually were pretty viral when they came out. There's one about the, there's a story about crystal skulls, the mysterious crystal skulls. There's one about the Santa Fe courthouse ghost, which was a huge one that was all over the news many, many years ago. And was a pretty viral story. And he goes through these stories. You start with the folklore, then he comes on and he investigates all of these stories. So he sets you up with what's known about them. Then he actually goes and investigates, and he tells you how he investigates. And then he provides you the solution to the story. So this isn't one of those books where you're left at the end of the book to decide whether or not the book is whether or not the story in the book is real or is it not real, what's going on. He provides you a scientific reasoning behind his answer for the story. And not to ruin them, but there is no ghosts, there is no things left at the end of this book. He provides solid, logical information. And it's not a skeptical angle. It's solving mysteries. Here's the facts. Here's what we do with the facts. Here's how we disseminate it. We look for the answer. We narrow out things that aren't part of this. And what we're left with is the answer. And he does a fantastic job of doing this. And as you read each example, each story, it chips away at the folklore and the mythology behind these stories. And you're left with the answers. And each story has a lot of resources and a lot of things that he shows how he did his work and how he completed these little investigations. And if you're somebody that you're an investigator of any kind of thing, whether it's ghosts, UFOs, cryptozoology, or, you know, legend tripping or whatever you want to do out there, this is a fine example, a great book to learn how to solve mysteries or to get out there in the field and do research and figure out how to get to the bottom of things. Because that's what we should all be doing. We shouldn't be looking for ghosts. We shouldn't technically be looking for UFOs or looking for cryptids, Bigfoot in the woods. We should be looking for the answers. We should be looking to solve what's going on. And we take it wherever it takes us. Whatever the answer is, that's where we go. So the book of the week this week, Mysterious New Mexico, Miracles, Magic, and Monsters, The Land of Enchantment by Benjamin Radford. Awesome book. Get it. The link is there on Amazon. And it's also on my link when you listen to the archive on the Podbean site. So I mentioned at the beginning of the show some conferences, conventions that are coming up. And if you want to keep ahead of all that, if you want to go to a local event, you can check out the Paranews Insider website at paranewsinsider.com and click on the events tab at the top. I keep everything separated between ghost conferences, conventions, UFO stuff, and cryptozoology. Now, sometimes there's events that have all three combined, and I'll try to keep it in the category that it belongs in, but sometimes these things transcend one and go to others. And if it's more or less one thing or the other, that's where I'm going to put it. Most of these things are primarily ghost conventions. And if you go to the site and you look at the archive or the events listing, an overwhelming majority of these are ghost conferences. And a small handful of them are UFO events. Most of these are MUFON-based events. Now, there's some just random ones. There's a really good one, big one, that's actually starting today, which is weird. This is the second event that we've had this year that started on a Wednesday. That's the International UFO Congress in Scottsdale, Arizona. So if you haven't gotten your tickets, you're not out there in Arizona now, you're missing it. It's over on the 21st, so it's over on Sunday. That's a big event. It's a good event. I know some members of the Cleveland Ufology Project, a local organization that I'm a part of, are out there witnessing this event right now, listening to some of the speakers out there. There's also some other UFO stuff coming up. The UFO Paranormal Summit, March 4th through the 5th in Ocean Shores, Washington. The 2016 Swamp Gas UFO Conference, March 19th in Ann Arbor, Michigan. And then we go to April, Ozark Mountain UFO Conference, Eureka Springs, Arkansas, and the MUFON PA Conference 2016 in Erie, Pennsylvania. That's April 30th in Erie, Pennsylvania. Try to get out there. I don't know if I'm going to have time. That's going to be an interesting one. And right now, there's some people out on a cruise ship celebrating the Spirit Cruise to the Voodoo Voyage out of New Orleans, Louisiana. They're out there right now until Sunday. That's already the land portion's done. That was a couple of days ago, and now they set sail on the 14th, and like I said, they'll be back on the 21st. And looking at the calendar, the Gift of Light Expo, March 12th to the 13th in Columbus, Ohio. The 5th Annual Texas Paranormal Unity Fest, March 19th in Glen Rose, Texas. Awesome city. I've been there before. They have the Dinosaur Valley State Park. Pretty cool. You can actually see footprints of dinosaurs in the rocks, and you can walk through the river with them. It's pretty cool. The Oregon Ghost Conference takes place April 1st through the 3rd in Seaside, Oregon. The Hudson Valley Paracon, April 1st through the 3rd in New Paltz, New York. The Gift of Light Expo, April 2nd through the 3rd in Cleveland, Ohio. Salem Con 2, April 8th and 9th in Salem, Massachusetts. And also have the 2016 New England Parafest, April 9th in Hampton Beach, New Hampshire. And the 16th of April is the 9th Annual Butler Paranormal Conference in Butler, Pennsylvania. I will be speaking at that event. I don't know what time I'll be speaking at that event. Cool thing about that is there's all the speakers. I believe there's five of us. They do is they put our names in a hat, and then they draw out names in the order in which we're going to speak. That's pretty cool because it kind of diffuses that situation of who the headliner is. And sometimes they have a headliner. I don't believe they really technically have one this year. I know John Venturi was there last year. Stan Gordon was also there. I'm not sure if they're going to be there this year or not. I can't remember the list of people, but I will be there. I'll be speaking at that event, and it's going to be a fantastic time. It was pretty packed last year, and hopefully it'll be packed this year. It's 9 years in the making, so it should be a great time. And get your tickets and come out there. It's I believe that's northeast of Pittsburgh. It's maybe it's more east than north, but it's in the area, general vicinity of Pittsburgh. So get there. It's going to be a lot of fun. I'll be speaking on the basics of cryptozoology with my book, Handbook for the Amateur Cryptozoologist. Speaking of cryptozoology, I mentioned this at the beginning of the show, a couple of events with the cryptozoology, but there's also another one, Sasquatch Event Weekend. That takes place March 4th through the 6th in Tridelphia, West Virginia. Now, the weird thing about this is it's at a Cabela's, which is a hunting store. I don't know if that's appropriate or not, but I don't have anything to do with it, so nothing I can say about it. But it's actually a free event, so you can go there and listen to people speak, and there's going to be some big names there. So if you're living in anywhere near Tridelphia, West Virginia, it's going to be a really interesting event. I don't think I'll be able to make that one to watch it, but it's going to be interesting to see some of these presentations. It's weird. It's three nights, and again, it's free. They're going to have Dr. Jeff Meldrum, I believe, is going to be there, if I remember correctly. I don't know what day he's going to be there, and I do know that Steve Coles, who will be speaking at the Pennsylvania Bigfoot Camping Adventure along with myself and Stan Gordon, will also be speaking at that event. It's kind of weird. I guess I've done it before, but it's a free event at Cabela's. And I just mentioned the 2016 Pennsylvania Bigfoot Camping Adventure, May 6th through the 8th in Farmington, Pennsylvania. It's really a cool event. It's speakers, and they're going to be doing some other things in between to kind of teach and train people how to make casts of footprints and how to look for evidence and information of cryptids, some workshops. And that we're also going to be doing some day and night hikes throughout the area looking for evidence of Bigfoot, maybe some big cats too. It's going to be a lot of fun. Like I mentioned again earlier at the beginning of the show, I'll be at the Westerville Public Library speaking on cryptozoology on May 12th in Westerville, Ohio. And then on that weekend, Saturday, is the Ohio Bigfoot Conference, May 14th in Salt Fork State Park Lodge and Conference Center in Lower City, Ohio. That's always a big one. Didn't get in there as a speaker this year, maybe next year. And if you have any information about any event and would like to hear it here, as well as see it on the website, let me know at insider@paranewsinsider.com. You can also go to paranewsinsider.com and click on the contact tab at the top. And the most recent update I have, there's an event called Monstrosity taking place August 26th and 27th in St. Louis, Missouri. They emailed me, I think it was yesterday, a day before, about this event. And I did it as soon as I could. I got it up there real quick and popped that information up there on the website. Because this is the list, folks. This is the most thorough list you're going to find on the internet. Probably shouldn't say that because somebody's going to copy it and steal it from me. But it's a lot of work. But I think it's good because these kind of things are important. I think they're critical to exchanging knowledge and ideas. Now, they're not all good, because sometimes it's just about paracelebs and different things. But there's a lot of great information, a lot of great networking. You're going to learn a lot from people you meet, even just audience members, people that are there just like you are, as well as the speakers. Obviously, those are pretty knowledgeable folks, regardless of what their backgrounds are, what they do. And I provide this, you know, obviously as a free service here on the website, paranewsinsider.com, because I believe in these events, and I think that they do provide some much better culture than things like television shows provide, and does provide a place for folks like myself to talk about what we do and how we do it. And another aspect of this is that if you have a conference or convention, ghosts, UFOs, cryptozoology, whatever it is, and you want to promote your event, I'm willing to have you here on the air during the Paranormal News Insider. I'm willing to set aside a few minutes, 5, 10, 15 minutes, whatever you need to talk about your event. Who's your guests going to be? Are you doing any kind of charitable work with that event? And get you out here on the air and talk about it live, if you're willing and able. Because it provides another aspect of promoting your event. And I wouldn't have it any other way. And again, go to paranewsinsider.com. There's a contact link there at the top. And all the information you need about the show is right there on that website, paranewsinsider.com. You can click on the show archives. The live link for the WCJV chat room is there on the site. All the Facebook, Twitter, Google Plus links are there on the site as well. Archives for the Podbean and the archives on iTunes are also there, as well as any sponsors that I talk about. And I frequently talk about the International Cryptozoology Museum, which is still needing some help. They need some help relocating. They're having a little struggle here with the funding aspect of that, and you can help them out by going to their website, the GoFundMe site at gofundme.com/ICM-Africa, and contribute. Now, the gifts aren't as cool as they were when I did it. I got a free T-shirt, bumper stickers, and stuff for donating. And I also got a Orang Pendek foot cast. Now, if you donate some money, you're not going to get the T-shirt. It doesn't appear. But you'll still get, if you donate $50, you'll get a Bigfoot Yeti or Orang Pendek foot cast. And those run anywhere between $30 and I think $35, $37. So you can get that and just do a little bit of a donation to the International Cryptozoology Museum. Be a part of history. And if you're really looking at doing it, you can give $1,000. You're going to get an exact architectural replica of the new International Cryptozoology Museum building and a ton of other gifts. And be a part of history to this event. If you look at some of the names on here, Lyle Blackburn has donated money. I've donated money. A lot of great people in the cryptid field have donated money. And it's a worthwhile cause. It's not just going in anybody's pocket. This is a great place to go. If you're ever on vacation, not this time of the year, don't recommend it. It's too cold. And that does it here for this week. I want to thank everybody that's in the tonight for tuning in. And big thanks to Cindy, my producer, for all the havoc that she went through and all the problems that she had with Skype and everything. And to everyone else that's tuning in on the archives, keep your eyes in the skies, your ears in the woods, the hair standing on the back of your neck, and always keep your mind slightly ajar. And above all else, don't stop believing. For the Paranormal News Insider, this is Dr. Brian D. Parsons reporting.
You are listening to WCJV Digital Broadcasting, Youngstown, New York.